I'd like to welcome everybody on behalf of Rabbi Hochberg, on behalf of the Vod L'Chizuk HaTorah, and of course on behalf of the Young Israel of Jamaica Estates. The Vod L'Chizuk HaTorah is an organization that must be 20 years old, something like that, Walter, 20 years old for sure. And the theme of the organization was to sponsor shiurim on the secular holidays, when generally people are off, and to invite prominent Rosh Yeshiva, Talmidei Chachamim, to give shiurim. Traditionally, those shiurim are given on New Year's Eve. Being New Year's Eve is tonight, and the original Jamaica Estates has a regular Monday night shiur, so the Vod L'Chizuk HaTorah thought it would be appropriate to partner with the Young Israel and have this special shiur on a supposedly secular holiday or the eve of a secular holiday, that it should take place here at the regular Monday night time of 8:30. However, in anticipation that we would have attendees who are not regular people who come here Monday night for Gemara Chulin, so we thought that we would have a broader topic where you don't have to have a preparation or a continuity. So the topic chosen was Shemitah. And Rabbi Rosenzweig will speak on that. And when he finishes, and we hope that Professor Smadar Rosenzweig will finish at approximately the same time, we will daven Maariv first, and then we'll have a collation, some goodies. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. The as everybody knows, this year is Shnas HaShemitah. And if we look at the Psukim in the Torah that describe Shemitah, it's obvious that the Torah perceives Shemitah as a very unique opportunity, as a time really to be cherished, and as a time in which to cultivate certain important lessons to internalize in our lives. The Torah tells us in the beginning of Parshas Bahar, Vaydabra Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemar, that Moshe was spoken to on Har Sinai, and the details of Shemitah were elaborated at that time. Daber B'nei Yisrael V'marta Lehem Kisavo El Haaretz, when you enter into Eretz Yisrael Asher Ani Osei Lachem, the Shav Saharetz Shabbos LaHashem. And the land should rest. It should be a Shabbos LaHashem. Already, as everybody knows, Chazal zero in on even the introduction, Vaydabra Hashem Moshe Bahar Sinai Lemar, and they indicate Ma'inyan. Rashi quotes the Chazal Ma'inyan Shmita Etzel Har Sinai. Why all of a sudden, when it comes to Shmita as opposed to other mitzvos, do we zero in on the origin of these laws coming from Har Sinai? And we're told, "Halo kol mitzvos nemru b'Sinai, ela mashmita nemru klaloseho pratoseha v'diktukeha misinai, afkula nemru klaloseim v'diktukeim misinai." Kach shanu. This is a quote from the Toras Kohanim. So the Rabbeinu Bechai and others already raised the question. This is all very well and good, but it really just pushes the question back one level. In other words, we now know why the Torah links Sinai and Shemitah, to teach you that the details of Shemitah are also from Sinai. But the question that remains is, couldn't the Torah have conveyed the same lesson by speaking about any other mitzvah? Why was Shemitah singled out to be the origin or the source for the idea that klalim and pratim, that the details come from Sinai as well, not merely the general principles? That question, we're not so clear as to the answer to that question. Moreover, if you read the Psukim define a Shemitah in a very unique way, as we just read. The Shavsa Haaretz Shabbos LaHashem. Torah uses the expression of Shabbos, Shvisa Haaretz. Shemitah is a year of Shabbos, and not just any Shabbos, but Shabbos LaHashem. And Chazal zero in on this. They say that this implies that the Shabbos has to be lishma. It has to be observed with the intention that you're dedicating this year to the Ribbono Shel Olam, etc. The link to Shabbos is a link which is not only linguistic, but one which has other repercussions in terms of the idea of Isur Malacha and possibly of Chiluk Malachos. I don't know if we'll have time later on to get back to this. There are specific Isurei Malacha on Shemitah. In particular, the Torah speaks about Zriya and Zmira, planting and pruning, Kitzira and Bitzira, harvesting and cutting the grapes. And there are many parallels to Shabbos. There's even a Havamina in the Sifra, quoted by Rashi, which of course we don't accept, but it's a shocking or a startling Havamina in its own right. Maybe one would think that you don't have to observe real Shabbos during Shnas HaShemitah. After all, the whole year is a Shabbos. Again, of course, we don't accept that, but I'm trying to underscore the fact that we take very seriously this link between Shemitah and Shabbos. It's not just a convenient linguistic usage, but obviously, thematically, the idea of Isur Malacha, the idea of Shabbos LaHashem, is taken very, very seriously. And our dinim that we learn from Shabbos to Shemitah, Amir L'Akum, other things, which reflect that we take this as a substantive and not just as a linguistic connection. And the question, of course, is why? But if one understands the whole tone of the Parsha, it's perfectly clear, as I said before at the outset, that the Torah views Shemitah as a rare opportunity, and as something which is pivotal. Shemitah, like Shabbos, is a centerpiece of every Jew's life. It's a centerpiece of the national life of the Jewish people. Just like every day of the week revolves around Shabbos, as the Ramban explains a very famous passage in Vayikra, and again in his Drash on the Rosh Hashanah, that's why we don't have names for days of the week, right? We don't have the equivalent of a Monday and a Tuesday and a Thursday. We say Yom Rishon, Yom Sheni, Yom Shlishi. Everything revolves around Shabbos. So too, when it comes to years, the entire calendar in years revolves around Shemitah and Yovel. First year, the second year, there are dinim that are determined by what year it is in the Shemitah cycle. Whether you give Maaser Sheni or Maaser Ani, right? That whole issue, other issues, are all dependent upon the count of the year from Shemitah. Essentially, the Torah wants us to look at Shemitah as something which inculcates certain values which we internalize and live with all 7 years, but which we accentuate in particular on that 1 year. The Shabbos LaHashem of Shabbos Haaretz is meant to influence us in such a way as to have impact, lingering impact, for the entire cycle, the entire period. If we observe Shemitah properly, it's clear to us that Ki li ha'aretz, li kedushas ha'aretz. The land, the earth, Eretz Yisrael, all belongs to the Ribbono Shel Olam. As much work as we put in, as much as we might have private ownership, the fact is that We're on that land, we have the rights to that land, only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us those rights. Just like Shabbos, where we desist from our creativity once a year, in order to, again, accentuate that whatever creativity we have comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not from ourselves, so that the resting and the desisting from Malacha is both an imitatio Dei, it's a way of trying to imitate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ma'u Chanun, Ma'u Rachum, also Ma'u Shoves, Kach Anachnu Shovsim, but even more, it's a way of showing the difference between us. There's a time during the week when we can't work because it's important that we reflect upon not only our similarities, Tzelem Elokim, but also our limitations and our differences. So too, in the national life of the Jewish people, ideally in Eretz Yisrael, every 7 years, creativity, in the sense of kochi v'otzam yadi, planting, harvesting, trying to extract from the land, that stops so that we understand what exactly our role is, so that we become more appreciative of the opportunities that are given to us. The Shvisa on the seventh year is a matir for Malacha on the other years, just as Shvisa on Shabbos is a matir for Malacha all year and all week, around as well. And there are other important lessons which we extract from the principle of Shemitah as well. It's fascinating that Shemitah, unlike certain other mitzvot hatliyos ba'aretz, only began later, after the Yerusha, the Chalukah, the Yeshiva, 14 years. And basically, one way to look at what happens in Shemitah, it doesn't begin right away then either. You have the years of Yerusha, the Yeshiva, the 14 years after they entered into Eretz Yisrael. Then they counted 7 years, and then they had a Shemitah year. And it's always occurred to me, at least, I don't know if it's right, but I think it might be right, that in some respect, every 7 years, we go back to the way Klal Yisrael began their sojourn in Eretz Yisrael. They began as a collective, where the totality of Eretz Yisrael belonged to the totality of Klal Yisrael before there was individual ownership, individual property. And after that property is separated and allocated, right, as it should be through the Shvatim and through families, etc., every 7 years after that, we have a year in which individual ownership is set aside in favor of the notion of Klal Yisrael as a collective, as a unit. To remind us that sense of unity and collectivity, to remind us of that sense of unity and achva that binds all of Klal Yisrael together. So whereas there is supposed to be a chelek for every Jew in Klal Yisrael, we even speak in halacha of Dalet Amos Sheve'eretz Yisrael, an interesting idea, a kind of a unique fiction in halacha. In other words, even if you don't own any real property in Eretz Yisrael, when it comes to certain halachos, one can speak generally of his Dalet Amos Be'eretz Yisrael. The Gaonim certainly felt very strongly about this, and the Rambam has it in several places as well. So even though every individual has a concept of Dalet Amos Be'eretz Yisrael, in a sense, that flows from his being a member of the Tzibor, of the total collective of Klal Yisrael. And every 7 years, Bishnas HaShemitah, when individuals are not allowed to express their individual ownership of the land, the Isra of Ketzira and Betzira and Zriya and Zmira is about acting as an individual owner. So we come back again to that idea that individuals are part simply of the collective of Klal Yisrael. So basically, what I'm trying to illustrate very quickly, is that if you look at the Parsha and if you delve into the halachos and the ideas and the ideals of Shemitah, it's clear that Shemitah constitutes a special time in Jewish living and a special opportunity to cultivate, to cherish, to value. For that reason, it's almost a cruel irony that when we speak about Shemitah Bizmanenu, instead of focusing on these and many other positive ideals, what we generally focus on, and what we're going to focus on for the rest of the evening, but hopefully with this in mind, is the question of the Heter Mechiras Eretz Yisrael Bishnas HaShemitah. The possibility of selling the land of Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews to avoid, to neutralize the very Kedusha sanctity and the very Halachos, which I spoke of, or tried to speak of just a few minutes ago, as reflecting such important values and such important ideals. And the question is how really to reconcile the need to discuss that very crucial practical topic, which we're going to turn our attention to in just a minute, with the ideals and with the values that obviously are the heart and core and center of what Shemitah is supposed to be all about. The history of this topic goes back to the 19th century, when there began to be more and more people, influx of Jews into Eretz Yisrael, the beginning of obviously what would develop into a real yishuv, a resettlement of Eretz Yisrael after so many years in which Jewish life was not centered there. So basically, there emerged a very big controversy, a debate. At stake was the economic well-being of what was then a struggling yeshuv. Later on, obviously, Medinas Yisrael, when it was created after 1948, came into play as well. The question is whether or not the prohibitive restrictions that represent these beautiful ideals that I spoke of before, the prohibition to work the land, Zeria, Zmira, Ketzira, Betzira, on the Daraisa level, and the prohibitions that govern the way that we consume and relate to the peros of Eretz Yisrael, which are invested with Kedusha, with a certain sanctity, but the question of Schora, doing business, the peros shvius, the question of exporting them, chutzlaretz, non-Jews, the proper way to relate to them, bikdusha, with sanctity, the concept of biur b'shvius, you have to, at a certain point, you have to remove all of shmita, all peros shmita, from your home. These halachos constituted a very significant challenge to that fledgling group which was trying to resettle Eretz Yisrael. And some poskim suggested that it was important to circumvent some of the Isurim of Shemitah by selling land to non-Jew, thereby neutralizing the effects of some of these Isurim and Dinim, in order that this struggling Yishuv be able to find some stability, be able to grow, stabilize, so that the future could be ensured, so that there could be what would develop later, a Medinas Yisrael. This question, this debate, pitted some of the greatest Rabbanim of its time on different sides of the issue. People like Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan and Rabbi Yosef Engel and Rav Kook, on one side favoring the emergency requirement to sell the land to non-Jews, against people like the Beis HaLevi and the Netziv, and again, other very weighty Talmidei Chachamim who were adamantly opposed to this circumvention. This issue was complicated by the emotionally tragic paradox inherent in the issue itself. That revitalization of life in Eretz Yisrael, which obviously is embodied by the opportunity to observe mitzvos atlios ba'aretz, trumos, maestros, and of course Shemitah, should come at the expense of and undermine the financial or the practical side of Yeshiva Aretz. How do you choose between the practical side and the ideals? Shemitah in particular, because of some of the issues that I outlined earlier, the view of that constitutes a critical foundation, a centerpiece for mitzvos atlius ba'aretz particularly, and for the national life of the Jewish people more generally, constituted a great kind of a heart-wrenching or rending problem. Moreover, the Torah speaks about a special havtacha, special promise that Jews will not suffer from keeping shvius. Again, later on, after the Torah speaks about Yovel, in the same parsha in Bahar, Torah tells us, v'chitomru ma nochal v'shana hashvius. Torah addresses exactly the issue of pragmatic need. What are we going to eat during the Shemitah year? Hein lo nizra, v'lo ne'asof es tfuaseinu. If we're not allowed to plant, and we're not allowed to act as owners, and we're not allowed to store, the answer is v'tzivisi es birchasi lachem bashana hashishis v'osos es hatvua v'shlosh hashanim uzratem es hashana hashminis v'achaltem en hatvua yashan ad hashana hachiyis ad bo tvuasa tochlu yashan. Basically, the Torah provides a special avtacha, something that we don't find often, it's a very rare kind of thing, where the Rabbanu Shalom says, don't worry about it, I'll take care of you, I guarantee that no one will go hungry during the Shemitah year. Part of the debate among Gedolei Yisrael about the Heter Mechira revolved around this Haftacha. The Netziv, for example, in his Kuntres on Inyanei Shemitah, says in his opinion there's greater Sakana ignoring the Haftacha of the Torah than there is ignoring what appears to be the political and especially the economic realities that were spoken of in such urgent tones by the other Gedolim. It's not a machlokes, you know, whether you rely on the Haftacha, obviously. It's a much more nuanced issue than that. But this Haftacha certainly complicates matters considerably. And the Netziv writes very powerfully about this theme. He says, it's not that I'm not a pragmatic individual. He says, my other psakim reflect that I'm very realistic. But this is how I understand the Haftacha. There's greater danger, even financially, ignoring it than there is trying to neutralize Shemitah. The fact is that these considerations, the fact that it is almost tragic that mitzvos hatlius ba'aretz and Shemitah in particular should come at the expense of Yishuv ha'aretz, when the ideal of Yishuv ha'aretz is reflected partially in the opportunity to fulfill mitzvos hatlius ba'aretz, these considerations are reflected even in the restrictions that were imposed by the Matirim, by that group of Rabbanim who accepted and who advocated strongly for the Heter Mechira. So that, for example, they always argued that when it comes to the Chumros Daraisa, who should always be Machmir, in terms of Avodas HaKarka in particular, they also insisted every time they instituted the Heter Mechira that it be instituted as a horas shah each time. Because each time it was a special gzera, special hora'ah, that needed to be reenacted for the next Shemitah. It's not that, you know, until a further notice, you know, every 7 years, this is going to be the policy. Because they understood, too, that this was a concession to an ideal, and the ideal was something that we wanted to return to as quickly and as urgently as possible. Moreover, they encouraged those farmers who were capable of implementing Shvius ideally to do so, and they always insisted that there be portions in which ideal Shemitah was observed. Shalot Tishtakach Toras Shvius. So even the Matirim were no less sensitive to the idealistic idea that we should observe Shemitah fully if possible. What I'd like to do tonight, the time that we have, just that much time, is discuss briefly three different components, just to familiarize people with what the issues of the Heter Mechira are, so at least going forward people have some understanding, and then maybe to elaborate at some other point. The first issue to discuss is the question of whether or not it is permissible to sell the land of Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews under any conditions, and under these conditions in particular, or not. Mostly that gets us involved with the Iser of Lo Sachanem, which we'll get to in just a minute, a pasuk in Parshas Vayetzchanan, Perek Zayin, in Devarim. That's the first issue. Can you sell the land to non-Jews? Does that involve a prohibition or a transgression of an Iser min HaTorah? The second question is, this is even the more important question, does the Mechira accomplish the goal of neutralizing Dinei Shvius? In other words, is it an effective tool, an effective mechanism, such that there wouldn't be the burden of Shvius for those who are not capable of shouldering it? And the third question, which is a question I already touched on a little bit, but which requires a lot more analysis, and that is it desirable to do so? Even if there's no ESERP, and it's an effective sale, at what price such a Heter Mechira, in terms of, you know, the ideal, in terms of the values, in terms of the general approach to halacha? This, of course, involves us with the broader issue of harama, subterfuges, or halachic circumventions, when they are permitted and when they are not. I don't know we'll have time for all three, but at least we'll do what we can, try to sketch some of the basic issues. The first issue, as I mentioned, is the question of whether or not there's a prohibition to sell land in Eretz Yisrael. Where would that come from? So the Torah tells us in Parshas Vayeshkanan, in Devarim, Perek Zayin, right at the end of the Parsha, the Torah speaks about what you have to be concerned about in entering Eretz Yisrael. Ki yibiyacha Hashem alekecha la'aretz asher atavasham alerishta, when you enter into Eretz Yisrael, v'nashal goyim rabim mipanecha, hachiti ha-girgoshi, ha-emori, ha-knani, ha-prizi, ha-chivi, ha-yivusi, shiva goyim rabim ba'atsumim mimecha. So you will encounter and do battle with the Sheva Amamim, the Chitim, the Girgashim, the Emorim, Knanim, Prizi, Chibi, and Yevusi. Unosanam Hashem Elokecha lefanecha v'hikisam. Bar Shalom will come to your aid. You will succeed. You will vanquish this enemy. Hacharem tacharim osam. You're supposed to destroy them. Lo tichros lehem bris v'lo sechaneh. Don't enter any pact, any agreement with them, an agreement which allows them, in other words, to continue to live there and to be Oved Avodah Zarah. V'lo sechaneh. The word v'lo sechaneh is a very mysterious term. It's not a common verb in the Torah. What is lo sechaneh? What does it mean? So the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah, and if you test on the base, which I know I have here somewhere. One second. The Mishnah of Avodah Zarah and Av Chaf Amud Beis tells us as follows. Rabbi Lazar Omer, one second, Ein Mochin Lahem, you cannot sell to non-Jews, B'mechuba Lakarka. Ava Mocharu Mishi Yiktat, Rabbi Yudah Omer, Mocharu Amidatz Lakutz. You're allowed to sell Tevua, produce of Eretz Yisrael, to a non-Jew, but you're not allowed to sell the land itself, Mechuba Lakarka. The Gemara says, "Minani mili." How do you know this? Amar Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina, the Amar Kra lo sechaneh. We're quoting this exact verb in Vayeshkan. What does lo sechaneh mean? Lo titen lahem chanaya bekarka. Do not give them an encampment. Don't give them any kind of hold in the land. So the Gemara says, "Hi lo sechaneh mi boilei." The Hachi Kamar Achmana lo titen lahem chen. Don't we need lo Tichanein to teach you something else? Lo titein lahem chein. Don't be merciful on the Oved Avodah Zarah, and don't compliment the Oved Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara says, "Lo my lo tichanein." Torah Shleima Kro lo tichunein. My lo tichanein. Shema minatarti. Then the Gemara says, "Akati mi boilei v'hacham rachmana lo titein lahem matana shel chinam." Don't we also learn something else in this pasuk? Not to give gratuities or free gifts to an Oved Avodah Zarah. The Gemara says, "Imkein lemakra lo sechinem, my lo sechanem, shma mina kulu. Tanya namihachi lo sechanem lo titanem chanaya bekarka. Davracher lo sechanem lo titanem chen. Davracher lo tchanem lo titanem matnas chino." So we have this pasuk lo tchanem, which basically teaches us three different halachos. Number one, don't give them any kind of hold in the karka of Eretz Yisrael. Number two, don't compliment or exhibit rachmanus on Oved Avodah Zarah. Number three, don't give them gratuities, matnas chinam. Partially the question is what the relationship is between these three isurim, and that we're not going to have so much time to discuss this evening. The first issue is, which non-Jew is addressed in Lo Sechaneh? And the question of whether the three separate dinim of Lo Sechaneh are one or three becomes very crucial to this issue. For example, the Parsha itself really speaks about Shiv Amamim. V'noshal Goyim Lefanecha, Chiti, Girgashi, Chivi. We read it before. And if that's the case, then one could have said that essentially What we're dealing with in Lo Sechanim is a prohibition that relates only to the Shiva Amamim. We no longer have the Shiva Amamim, so that would not be an issue Bizmanenu. The Bali Tosis already asked this question on the top of Chaf Omen Aleph. Kasha, the high Lo Sechanim, Mashma, the Shiva Umos, Dafka Ksiv. Tosis goes on to say, V'yishlomar, Devadai, the Kohan Akroi, Iketam Araba, in most dinim, losichos lahem bris, another dinim of that part, losachaya kol neshama, there's reason to limit it to shiva amanim. However, aval matnas chinam unasinas chein v'chanaya ein shum tam v'chalek bein shar of the kochavim l'zayin amanim. Tosfos says something very interesting. Even though the pasuk, the context is zayin amanim, you have to kind of read the pasuk, the Parsha, in a very selective way. Those aspects that where it's compelling to limit it to Zayin Amim, to limit it to Zayin Amim, and those where it's not, we should apply it across the board. So the Bali Tosis are suggesting a limitation and rejecting it. According to them, Shiva Amim is not the limit of Lo Sechanim. It's interesting to note, however, that from Sajigon omits Lo Sechanim in his Minyan HaMitzvos. He doesn't count it. And Rabbi Yerucham Fishel Perlo wrote the commentary to Sefer Mitzvot of Rabbi Sajigon. So he suggests that the reason Rabbi Sajigon omitted it is because he felt that Lo Sechanim is already covered by Lo Sichros Lahem Bris. Now Lo Sichros Lahem Bris, according to the majority of Rishonim, is limited to the seven Amdin. The Rambam in Perek Yud, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, Halacha Dalet, Halacha Gimel and Dalet, disagrees. Rambam applies Lo Sichros Lahem Bris to others as well, to other Ovdei Avodah Zarah. But what might come out, according to, if you read Rav Sajigon in light of the majority of Rishonim, is Rav Sajigon really felt that Lo Sechanim, which is already subsumed under the rubric of Lo Sichros Lahem Bris, really is limited to the seven Amamim. That's Tosis' question, but where Tosis rejected it, Rav Sajigon may have accepted it. Yeah.
When Tosis says that we generalize Lo Sechanim beyond the Sheva Amim to Ovdei Kochavim, does he include
Ger Toshav? So let me get to that next. So I'm going, trying to go Minakal Lakavim, but your question is very much on mark. So one possible place to distinguish would be Zayin Amim, and I say maybe that is the view of from Sajigon. It's implied by the context of Psukim, but it is definitely rejected by the mainstream of Rishonim, including Bali Tosis, and the Chachmei Svarad as well. But if we don't draw the line at Zayin Amamin, and we include other Ovdei Avodah Zarah, so you're very legitimately asking, so can we draw it elsewhere? So the Meiri, for example, does. The Meiri has a very famous shita in many, many sugyas and chas, and many masechtas. He talks, the Meiri was impressed with monotheists. He felt that other monotheists have great standing, even if there aren't Gerei Toshav. He calls them always Amim HaGedurim B'Darkei Hadas. Actually, in our Chulin Shir, we'll get to that soon, because we'll be discussing Shechitas Akum and so on. The Meiri explains, in this context too, in Avodah Zarah, Dav Chaf Amud Aleph, that Lo Sechanim only applies to real Ovdei Avodah Zarah, meaning idol worshippers or polytheists. But Amim HaGedurim B'Darkei Hadas, who believe in one God, monotheists, in other words, that would include, for the Meiri at least, not only Muslims, but also Christians, and not only, you know, Protestants, but also Catholics, Amim HaGedurim B'Darkei Hadas, would not be included in the prohibition of Lo Sechanim. There is a debate in general whether the Meiri Shita is an extreme Shitas Yachid, or it is a little bit more mainstream. Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, for example, in certain halachos at least, picked up on this idea, doesn't quote the Meiri. Here and there you have echoes of it. There are those who think that the Meiri was very much a Shitas Yachid, but that's the Meiri's view. There are others who draw the line at Muslims as opposed to Christians. Because, as we know, Islam is not Avodah Zarah. Christianity is Avodah Zarah for a Jew. It's not necessarily Avodah Zarah for a non-Jew. I don't want to go into that too much detail right now. It's not our topic, but the short story of it is, in other words, For Jews who believe, who have to believe in Yichud Hashem, right, not only in the existence of one God, but one integrated God, Yichud Hashem meaning that there are no parts to the Ribbono Shel Olam, so the Trinity constitutes, generally, it's viewed that Trinity is an Avodah Zarah idea. But for Christians who are obligated to believe in one God, but not necessarily in our sophisticated Yichud Hashem notion of that, it's quite possible that for them, Christianity, even Catholicism, is not problematic in the least. It's not about Azara. So it's their perspective versus our perspective. But either way, when it comes to about Azara, when it comes to Islam, everybody agrees, since there is no Trinity, all there is the Prophet Muhammad. We have other problems with Islam, as we know. But in terms of theology, right, Islam is much less of an issue than Christianity. And as such, when we're talking about strict Avodah Zarah, Muslims are generally excluded. What about when it comes to Lo Sechani? So the Kaftav HaPerach in Perek Yud, his Sefer, Sir Bashtori HaParchi, who wrote a very important work on Hukos Eretz Yisrael. So in his work he says that Yishma'elim do not have a prohibition. The prohibition not to sell Mechubar LaKarka to a non-Jew does not apply to Yishma'el. And this is picked up as well in the Bach, in Choshen Mishpatzim and Reish Mem Tes. The Bach says something very similar. This is one of the factors that was seized upon by the Matirim, those who allowed the Het to Mechira. They always insisted they had to sell it to a Muslim, which is not that difficult in that part of the world. The Beis Yosef disagreed. Beis Yosef in Simen Reish Mem Tes and in Simen Kuf Nun Aleph says even Muslims are included in Lo Sechanim. He drew the line at a Ger Toshav, which I think was your original question. A Ger Toshav is somebody who is Mekabel, whatever he's Mekabel, we discussed that a little bit in our Chulin Shir as well, either not to be Oved Avodah Zarah or the Sheva Mitzvos, whatever it is that is the proper Kabbalah, it's a Machlokas and the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, but whatever the proper Kabbalah for a Ger Toshav is, he has to make that commitment in the presence of some sort of a Bezdin. And the Beis Yosef seems to require that formal status of Ger Toshav in order to escape the problem of Lo Sechanim. In Shabbos Aretz, which is Rav Kook's sefer on the Heter Bechira, and many other Dinei Shemitah as well, very important sefer, so he makes the argument that one can be mechalek between two different issues. He says, when it comes to the question of, for example, Amira La'akum Shvus, a non-Jew doing malacha on your behalf, in Shabbos, maybe even in Shemitah, as far as that is concerned, anybody other than a Ger Toshav is treated like a regular non-Jew. But when it comes to the issue of Lo Sechanim, there he says what's important is negative influences. After all, what's the reason Lo Sechanim, Lo Titalem Chanaya Bakarka? The whole parsha is when you enter into Eretz Yisrael, we want you to live a certain kind of life. We want you to enthusiastically embrace the ideals of Yadus, and of Kedusha, and everything that goes with it. And we're concerned, that's what the whole Parsha of Veschanim is about, that the presence of entities that are going to try to undermine your commitment to Kedusha is going to distract you, or worse, from that goal. So Rav Kook says, if that's the case, then the concept of Ger Toshav in the context of Lo Sechanim, in other words, there would be no problem of Lo Sechanim, could perhaps be understood and applied in a broader way. Even if there's no technical Kabbalah b'fnei Bezdin, after all, Ger Toshav can only be Bizman Shayogol Noeg, which would exclude it from Bizman Hazeh, but still, somebody who basically doesn't have the status of Oved Avodah Zarah would be able to buy land in Eretz Yisrael as well. So that's the first issue. First issue is, which non-Jew is included in the prohibition of Lo Sechanim? And as we've just explained, that's a machlokes, but it could be that Muslims, and maybe even Christians, but especially Muslims, there is a case to be made that they're not included in the prohibition of Lo Sechanim. The second issue is to consider the circumstances of the mechila. When the Mishnah says that you can't sell mechubel karka to a non-Jew, that's obviously referring mostly to a real estate transaction where you're transferring real title. But what about where the circumstances are a little bit different? For example, lahanos atzmo, you're selling the land because it's beneficial to you. Would there still be this prohibition, or only if it's beneficial to him? For example, we mentioned our three prohibitions of lo sechanim. Chanoya bekarka, land of Eretz Yisrael, matnas chinam, and chay. Right? Gratuities and the question of chay. When it comes to matnas chinam, there's an important tosefta. The tosefta of Avodah Zarah says about matnas chinam, b'medvar mamurin ba'akum she'enu makiro, o shaya over mimakom lemakom, avlima ya'oavo, o shcheno mutar, she'enu ela kimochalo. Basically, the tosefta says, this idea about not giving gratuities, a gift, to a non-Jew, or to an Ovid of Arizara, that is to be understood when it's really gratuitous. You have no relationship with this person, and you give him a gift. That comes under the rubric of lo sechanim, lo titale matnas chinam. But if this is somebody with whom you have a relationship, so basically it's not gratuitous. It's part of that relationship. Like people who work with you or for you, and you want to give them a gift. Right? It's part of the relationship itself. You're investing, essentially, in the relationship ongoing. And that doesn't constitute matnas chinam, eino ela kimochrolo. What's fascinating is that some of the poskim suggested, well, we see that when it comes to the matnas chinam dimension of lo sechanim, that if self-interest is involved, there is no iser. So too, when it comes to selling land, well, why does anybody want to sell Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews during the Shemitah year? Not because we want to benefit them, but because of the onerous burden, economic burden, of Yisurei Shvius. It's better for Yishuv Haaretz, that's the determination that's being made, that's the assessment. It's better for the country, it's better for the Jewish people, that for this 1 year we make this arrangement. So, just as you can give matnas chinam, right, when it's to your benefit, lo sechanim, so too the lo sechanim of lo titlen chanaya bekarka, when self-interest is what motivates, is going to be mutter. That was the argument that some of the poskim made. However, there is a bit of a flaw in this argument, or at least one that should be raised. And that goes as follows. There are two ways to look at the Tosefta. One way is that the Iser of lo sechanim only applies when it is gratuitous, when there's no self-interest. However, there's another way to look at the Tosefta, and that is that the Tosefta is redefining matnas chinam. And the language of the Tosefta actually points in that direction. Eino ela kimochro lo. We're not saying that matnas chinam is permissible when you benefit. What we're saying is, when you benefit, it's no longer matnas chinam. So if we say that the Tosefta is making a statement about lo sechanim and the question of who is the beneficiary, what is the motivation, even then, it's not clear, but at least one could make the argument that you could equate lo sechanim of chanaya bekarka with lo sechanim of matnas chinam. However, if the interpretation of the Tosefta really is that if this is an investment, it's kimochrolo, it's not chinam at all. In narrowest sense, it's chinam. When I hand over the gift and I say, you know, I want to do something for you, and I don't get anything in exchange, for that moment, it's chinam. But in the totality of the relationship between us, it's not chinam at all. It's part of a web and a fabric of interaction. That's true when it comes to matnas chinam. But that idea has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with chanaya bekarka. So this would be part of that discussion. This issue, however, could be reformulated in a slightly different way. After all, if you look at the Rambam in Perek Yud, Hilchos Avodah Zarah, mentioned before, and Rabbeinu Bechai is very clear about this as well, and the Parsha. Essentially, Lo Suchanim is in a context of we want to build Eretz Yisrael, we want to ensure and safeguard its Kedusha character, and therefore Lo Titalem Chanaya Bekarka. So one might say, even aside from the Tosefta, that if the purpose, based on the assessment, and considering the counter-pressure of the Haftacha, of course, as well, if the assessment is, this is good for Yishuv Haaretz, it's possible under those conditions to argue that the very factor that impels one to say Lo Titalem Chanoya Bekarka, in this case, justifies selling the land temporarily with the proper safeguards. That too was a suggestion that was made by some of the poskim who were matim. Another suggestion was to focus on the limited character of the mechira. A mechira lezman katzer. This of course gets into a tricky question. This is particularly the focus of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, who suggested that if you sell the land, you know, lezman katzuv, that's not a violation of chanoya bekarka. Chanoya bekarka is only if it's an open-ended sale, a permanent sale. But if it's built in that the land is going to revert or has to be resold after the fact, that doesn't violate chanoya bekarka. The problem with that, of course, is twofold. Number one, and the twofold, you know, is a kind of a difficult balance to maintain. Number one, does it accomplish the goal? Does a mechira lezman katzuv accomplish the neutralizing of dinei shviyas? Because as we'll see soon, that is the issue of yesh kinyan akum lahafkia miknushas haaretz. The ownership of a non-Jew, right, removes the sanctity of the land, or at least of the produce. Does a mechira lezman katzuv have that effect, as does a mechira, right, l'chalutin? At the same time, the other part of the tightrope is there an iser of mechira lezman katsu? In other words, there are some poskim who believe that mechira lezman katsu is tantamount to schirus. It's like renting. And if it's renting, then it's not a real sale and there's no real ownership. After all, the maskir is more owner than the socher. The Rambam in Perek Gimel Hilchos Mechira and a few other places does seem to accept the idea of a mechira lezman katzuv, which is separate from schirus, from renting. But not all poskim agree. If we're dealing with schirus, we haven't accomplished very much. If we're dealing with a real mechira, albeit one which is lekatzuv, the question is, have we avoided the iser sufficiently? How do you walk the tight line between those two things? On the one hand, avoiding the iser, and yet accomplishing the goal. The precedent for this comes from the same parsha, Ha'aretz lo timacher litzmisus. When it comes to Eretz Yisrael, we're told not to permanently sell the land, in connection with the issues of Yovel. And the whole discussion, the Rambam, the Sefer HaChinuch, let's say you sell the land, lizman katsuv. Is that a violation or not? Okay. So this was another avenue that was explored, possibly selling the land for limited time. There was another suggestion as well. And that is to sell the land, this is again something that Rukuk suggested, sell the land to someone who already has a piece of Eretz Yisrael. In other words, Lotitalem Chanaya Bekarka means do not give them, literally it means, an encampment in Eretz Yisrael. In other words, don't give this individual, right, some hold in Eretz Yisrael that he didn't have previously. But if somebody already owns land in Eretz Yisrael, to sell him a little more, is that a violation of Chanoya Bekarka? Not so clear. So that too is one of the snifim lehater to combine to some of the other issues, l'tovas yishuv haaretz, l'hanas atzmo, l'zman katsuv, right, to someone who isn't an Ovid Avodah Zarah, maybe is very much akin to a Ger Toshav, to justify the Heter. There are some who suggested as well, based on that Mishnah of Avodah Zarah that I mentioned before, that the sale should be initially not the land, but of the produce. Al Menas Lakutz. Sell all the land Al Menas Lakutz with the intention of cutting down the produce. Aye, but that's not always going to happen. And then you're going to be left with the problem of people working land, which turns out always had Kedusha Saaretz. So they suggested, again, the Mishnah says, Al Mokarhu Mishi Yiktatz, Rabbi Yehuda Mer Mokarhu Al Menas Lakutz. We paskin like Rabbi Yehuda, that you'll have to sell Mechubar LaKarka on the condition that it is going to be harvested. So what the Poskim suggested was, sell the land on the condition that it will be harvested, with the additional proviso that if it isn't harvested, then that triggers a Mechira Lizman Katsu. What you gain by that, but either way you're going to need the Mechira Lizman Katsu, that you are not directly selling the land. What you're doing is completely mutter. You're selling it Al Menas Lakush. The non-Jew, by not fulfilling his part of the bargain, he's the one who triggers Clause B. That's preferable than directly selling to him in that way. And therefore, you'll get the effect of neutralizing Kedusha Saaretz, even though you are not the ones who are initiating it. These are some of the issues that have to do with Lo Sachanit. The question is, if we don't accept these various snifim leheter, what are the consequences of that? Have we violated Lo Sachanim, which is obviously not something that we would like to do? But have we only done that, or have we also undercut the effect of the Mechira? If you violate Lo Sachanim, does that mean the Mechira doesn't go through, and therefore Kedusha Sa'aretz remains completely intact, or not? This too is a debate among the poskim. Chazonish, among others, suggested that since you have representatives selling the land, now if I sell my own land and I violate Lo Sachanim, the Mechira is certainly a Mechira. It could be I'm in violation and I shouldn't do it L'chatchila. But the Mecher is certainly Chal. No one ever said that Lo Sachanim is Ma'akev, the Dine Mamanis of Mechira. However, if the State of Israel sells land, or others sell on behalf of others, and that's where there's a component of Shlichus, so then it becomes a little bit more complicated, because of the problem of Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera. There is a debate, again, some of us learned Kedushin a couple of years back, there's a debate in Tosos and Bava Metzia, Daf Yud, 2 days in Tosos, when we say Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera, that you can't be a Shliach in a transgression, in a prohibition, does that just mean that you violate it and you have no right to do this? Or does it mean that the Shlichus itself is not Chal? If you take the view that Ein Shliach L'Dvar Avera means that you can't be a Shliach in a matter which is an Avera, and you say that Lo Sachanim is a prohibition, that all of these Snifei Heter don't work, so then you'd have a situation where the Mechira was not Chal. But most Poskim are of the opinion that the issue of Lo Sachanim being violated and the question of it undercutting the effect of the Mechira are really two different things, two different issues, and that generally the Mechira would be Chal, even if you were to violate Lo Sachanim. So that's issue number one. What is the Lo Sachanim status of selling land of Eretz Yisrael temporarily to non-Jews for the year of Shemitah? The more important question is the second question. The effect of the sale, assuming that the sale goes through. Does it accomplish the goal or not? And here we have several issues, which again, I'd like to outline the story very briefly. The first is the real issue is whether non-Jewish ownership of the land of Eretz Yisrael neutralizes the dinim of Shvius or not. There's a general sugya in Gittin Daf Mem Zayin and elsewhere, but especially in Gittin Daf Mem Zayin, whether yesh kinyan akum lahafkia mekedushas meiser or not. Whether the ownership of a non-Jew of land in Eretz Yisrael removes the kedusha of trumos and maestros, whether that happens or not. However, there was some poskim who suggested that when it comes to Shemitah, the ownership, Jewish ownership, is a particular prerequisite. This is a debate between the Beis Yosef and the Mabit. The Beis Yosef in a tshuva, in his sefer Avkas Rochel, Simin Chavdalin, among others, understood the Sifra. There's a Sifra in Parshas Bahar, says, commenting on the Pasuk, Shabbos Aretz Yeh Lochem, Lochem Velo Lacherim. What does that mean? So the Rashi Nishantz, when he quotes that, the Rashi Mishantz and the Ravid interpret, Ein nosnim peros shvias lenachri, afil lachila, neno schiro lekito. That you're not allowed to give peros shvias to be eaten by a non-Jew unless he is your worker. That's how the Rash and the Ravid understood it. However, the Beis Yosef understood it almost in a completely opposite way. He understood that what it meant was, lochem velo lacherim, meaning, if there's non-Jewish ownership of the produce, then there is no kedusha shvias. That's a separate gzeres hakasuv that stands separate from the general issue of yesh kinyan akum lafkia midei maestros. In other words, shmitah is particularly sensitive to Jewish ownership. I think hashkafically that is a very compelling and powerful idea. One which you don't have time to elaborate right now, but that was the suggestion of Beis Yosef. The Mabit rejected it very vociferously and said, no, this is part of the general topic of Yeshken and Akum Lahafkia Mikdushas Aretz or not. The question of Yeshken and Akum Lahafkia is a complicated question. The very famous Rashi in Gittin, Rashi tells a story, in Sanhedrin, Rashi in Sanhedrin, Daf Kavav Mer Aleph, tells a story of Rab Chia Bar Zarnuki and Rab Shimon ben Yehotzadok have a ka'ozli la'aber shana ba'asya pagu bar shlokish itpo ba'adayu. These two Tamir Chachamim, they were on their way to being ma'aber sashana. They were going to create a leap year like we have this year, and Rish Lakish decided he wanted to tag along, literally itpo ba'adayu. Amar, he said, Ezel ichzi heich avdi uvda, I want to see how they handle the Ibra Hashanah. So they got more than they bargained for. I'm not going to go into the whole story. With Reish Lakish's presence, Chazi Lahu Gavra the Kakariv, they came across this individual, was Shemitah year, and he was being Choresh, he was plowing the land. Amar Lahan, so Reish Lakish turned to them and he said, Kohen the Choresh. Isn't this terrible? Here he is, this guy happens to be a Kohen, and he's being negligent about the laws of Shemitah, is doing Charisha. Amar Lahu, they said to him, maybe we should be melamed zchus and say agistun ani besocho. Then the Gemara goes right on and tells he bumped into another person who was kosach bekarmi and he said kohen bezamir and they said to him, how do you know? Maybe yochel omer l'akol besabad ani tzarech. Finally, Reish Lakish got very exasperated with them and he accused them of being soft on shvius. There's a whole story, the continuation, very fascinating. Shakla v'tari. For our purposes today, it's enough to speak about one point. What does it mean, agistun ani besocha? When they saw this Jew being choresh, doing plowing, which is prohibited, on Shemitah, they said, how do you know? Don't condemn him. Maybe he'll say to you, agistun ani besocha. So Rashi says, sachir v'karka shel nachriyu. What he was saying was, maybe he's just a worker, he doesn't own the field. The fields really were owned by a non-Jew, which means that even though it's Eretz Yisrael, he can work this non-Jew's field, farm, because it really belongs to the titular owner is the non-Jew. That's Rashi's interpretation. Tosus on the spot says, well, that's against the Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara says in Gittin, V'lo nehira, d'amin in Gittin, ein odrin emanachari b'shvias. That when it comes to Shemitah, you're not allowed to work with a non-Jew, meaning, even if he owns the land, you're not allowed to work the land of Eretz Yisrael in Shemitah. If you look at Tosus and Gittin, Samach Beis and Allah, Tosus says, well, maybe Rashi's Shita is based on the idea that Yesh Kinyan Akum Lafkia Mikdushas Aretz. After all, we find a debate in the Gemara Gittin, Mem Zayin Amad Aleph, whether non-Jewish ownership removes the chiyuv of trumos and maestros, maybe Rashi was explaining, according to the one who says, yesh kininakum, non-Jewish ownership is mafkia miknushas maeser, and that's what Rashi had in mind. That's a debate here. Now this is a very fascinating suggestion, and one which is not without serious difficulties. Why? The short story is, number one, the question is, how do we paskin? Generally we paskin, Gemara says in Gittin, ein kinyan akum, the ownership of a non-Jew, is not mafkia miknushas maiser. That's the general psak. That's how the Rambam paskins in Uchos Trumas Perek Aleph Halacha Yud. Ein kinyan akum lafkia miknushas aretz. Moreover, even if yesh kinyan akum lafkia, in the Bavli at least, the question of kinyan akum, non-Jewish ownership, is applied to maestros, Trumas and maestros. The source is degoncha, your dagon, your tvua, velo degan akum. It's not so clear that it applies to Shemitah at all. In Yerushalmi, they have a wider application of this idea. But in the Bavli, at least, it's not so clear. Moreover, Rashi himself in Masechet Yevamos actually seems to explain that Kinyan Akum, even the Mandamar Kinyan Akum Lafkia, that non-Jewish ownership doesn't have Kedushas Haaretz when it comes to Trumas and Maestros. That doesn't seem to apply, according to Rashi, in Yevamos Kuf Chapes, to Shemitah. And there's a bigger problem. After all, we're talking here about working the land. There are really two aspects of Shemitah. One is working the land. The other is deriving benefit from the peiros in a way that is inconsistent with the Kedusha requirements of peiros Shemitah. Two different problems. Schora, business, Yitzhiya Lechutz Laretz, Bior. There are a whole group of halachos have to do with the sanctity of the fruit. But the Gemara in Sanhedrin that Rashi is commenting on isn't speaking about the sanctity of the fruit. It's talking about the actual avoda bakarka. And the avoda bakarka is even less obviously influenced by non-Jewish ownership, and particularly according to Rashi himself. Because there is a major debate between, or there seems to be a major debate, between Rashi and the Rambam. When we say non-Jewish ownership, right, is not subject to Kedushas Maaser, what does that mean? So Rashi says what it means, Rashi and Gittin says, what it means is that the fruit and the vegetables, whatever it is, they're not invested with sanctity, right, and therefore you don't have to treat them as Trumos and Maaseros, etc. The Rambam, I'm not going to read it because it's a little bit late already, in Perek Aleph, Hilchos Shemitah, I'm sorry, Perek Aleph, Hilchos Trumos, Halacha Yud, the Rambam interprets differently. He says what it means is, if you were to hold that non-Jews' ownership undercut Kedushas Haaretz, what that would really mean would be that the land becomes like Chutz Laaretz. In other words, to reinvest that land with Kedushas Haaretz, you would require a kibush rabim. Otherwise, when you repurchase the land, it would be only like kibush yachid, like a personal acquisition or a personal conquest, which doesn't reinvest the land fully. That is the language of the Rambam. I'm just going to read it one minute because it's very important. That's the language of the Rambam in Perek Aleph, Hilchos Trumos, Halacha Yud. Now, the Rambam says we don't paskin that way. Hakam shekana karka b'Eretz Yisrael, a non-Jew acquires land in Eretz Yisrael, lo hifki uha min ha-mitzvos, alarehi b'kedushasa. It remains in its sanctity. Lefikach, therefore, what are the consequences? Im chaza Yisrael v'lacha mimenu, if the Jew repurchases, eina kikibush yachid, it's not considered like an individual repurchase. Elamafresh trumos emaisus, or maybe bikurim, hakol min ha-torah kilo nimko la-hakol. Implying that if we did paskin, that non-Jewish ownership affected, it would take this out of the national land of Eretz Yisrael. But Rashi didn't hold that way. The point is that according to the Rambam, non-Jewish ownership affects actually the karka, not just the payrolls. But according to Rashi, it only affects the payrolls. So how could Rashi say that Kin and Akum, even if that's what he's talking about, are going to allow you in the land that is purchased by the non-Jew to be Choresh, to be Kotzer? That isn't the payrolls. Maybe Kotzer is, but certainly not Choresh. What's going on? So many of the Achronim give the same answer, and the truth is the Sefer HaTruma says it earlier. Earlier in that Gemara, Rashi explains, early in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that Shvius in that time already was Midrabban. Because that Gemara goes according to the one who holds that Kedusha Shnia, the Kedusha that was invested by Ezra, Kidsha L'Shaita, Velo Kidsha L'Yosid Lava. In other words, the second Kedusha, the Kedusha of Ezra, was temporary only. So what the Sefer Truma explains, and the Achronim explained for Rashi, is as follows. Basically, we're not dealing with Kedushas Aretz Min HaTorah, we're dealing with Kedushas Aretz Min Rabbanan. And the Gemara there in Gittin goes on to explain that even though we paskin that non-Jewish ownership does not remove Kedushas Aretz in Eretz Yisrael, however, in Syria, the lands that were conquered by David HaMelech without full permission or out of order, too earlier than he should have, based on what he had yet to conquer from the existing lands of Eretz Yisrael, which have the status only of kibbutz yachid, personal kibbutz. In other words, the lands of Syria are only invested with kedusha drabanan. Chiv Truma Samaisu says only drabanan. There we say yesh kinyan akum lafkia. Non-Jewish ownership in Syria works. And the Rambam passes that way as well. And in fact, it's very fascinating if you look at the Rambam. Originally, he speaks about the question in Halacha Yud, Parak Aleph Ayuchu, which I read before. He speaks about Kedusha Sa'aretz and it relating to the Karka. And then he says, the Yesh Kinyan Ma'akum Basuria, however, when it comes to those sections of Eretz Yisrael which are only Drabanan, non-Jewish ownership works, Lafkiya Min HaMaisros, and here he adds, Umin HaShvius, Kimoshi Yisbar. In other words, what seems to be going on here is as follows. Basically, what the Sefer HaTruma is saying for Rashi and what is implicit in the Rambam is that if you hold that Shemitah is Doraisa, then non-Jewish ownership, we paskin non-Jewish ownership doesn't help. If you paskin Shemitah is Drabanan, then if you equate it with Surya, non-Jewish ownership will be mafkia mimaisros. But perhaps it goes even a step further than that. Because we asked before, but how do we know that non-Jewish ownership affects Shemitah? Maybe only Maiser. And how do we know that it affects the Karka? Maybe only Peros. The point is as follows. Once the Kedusha is Drabanan, the scope of Kinyan Akum mafkia, of non-Jewish ownership, undercutting the sanctity, is greater as well. In other words, a qualitative shift takes place. If you held Kinyan Akum was mafkia mikdushas aretz in kedushas aretz daraisa, it still may have been limited to things that affect the fruits and the sanctity of the fruits, because no one would deny that counterpoised to the non-Jewish ownership is a very powerful force called Kedushas Eretz Yisrael Doraisa. But when we speak about Surya, or Shemitah Bezman Azeh, and basically what we're saying is that there is no sanctity, it's a Chiyuv Drabanan only, you don't have the counter, it's not just that we happen to paskin now that Kinyan Akum works. The point is Kinyan Akum is not encountered by the strong opposing force of Kedushas Eretz. And therefore, not only will it work, it'll work even more effectively than it will work for the Mandamar who says, Yesh Kinyan Akum on the Doraisa. And therefore, it'll not only work for Maiser, but for Shemitah. That's how Beit HaLevi explains it. It'll not only work for Peros, but for Karka. That would be the proper explanation. However, this is where the big controversy comes into play. It's going to another 2 minutes. Beit HaLevi argued, Beit HaLevi said, well, basically then what you're saying is that the Hefer Mechira, selling a land in order to neutralize Kedushas Haaretz, the reason that it works is because Shemitah Bizman HaZez Rabbanan, and therefore we can compare it to Surya, and therefore non-Jewish ownership undercuts Shemitah. But is it true that just because Bizman HaZeh, Shemitah's Rabbanan, that we equate regular Eretz Yisrael with Surya? Let me back up for 1 second. Number one, not everybody agrees that Shemitah Bizman HaZeh is Rabbanan. Within the Rambam itself, it's controversial. There are some conflicting signals. The Rambam in one place, Perek Dalid, Hilchos Shemitah Halacha Chaf Dalid, seems to say that Shemitah's Noeg Bein B'fnei Abayis, Bein Shelo B'fnei Abayis. Elsewhere in Perek Yud, Halacha Tes of Hilchos Shemitah, he seems to say it's Rabbanan. That's one issue. But even if we assume, like most poskim do, that the Rambam and most Rishonim, very few exceptions, believe that Shemitah Bizman HaZeh is Rabbanan, the Beis HaLevi said, is it like Surya? There's a huge difference. Surya never had Kedushas Haaretz. And therefore it's true Mesemaisus was Rabbanan. But the reason that non-Jewish ownership works in Surya isn't necessarily because Shemitah and Maestros are Rabbanan. The reason that it works is because it doesn't come in opposition to Kedushas Haaretz. But even if we were to say that Shemitah Bizman HaZeh is Rabbanan, it's very possible that there is still some Kedushas Haaretz. There may be technical other reasons why Shemitah is Rabbanan. So that's how the Beis HaLevi explained. He said, well, there are basically three possible explanations of why Shemitah Bizman HaZeh is Rabbanan. One, because there's no Yovel, which is what the Rambam himself seems to say in Perek Yud, Hilchos Shemitah, Halacha Tes. Two, because of what Rashi said in Gittin, which is the whole second Kedusha of Ezra was Batel at the time of the Churban. Three, and I don't have time to discuss this fully, this is the most important part, issue, because there is a lack of Bias Kolchem. Rov Bnei Yisrael did not return in the time of Ezra. So the Beit HaLevi says as follows. It depends which of these reasons is applicable. Rashi works out perfectly. Because what are we explaining for Rashi? The reason that he could apply ownership of non-Jews being effective to neutralize Shemitah is because what? Because he held that Bizman HaZeh is Rabbanan, and therefore it's like Surya. That's perfect, because Rashi, when he explained why is it Rabbanan, because the Kedusha of Ezra didn't outlast the Churban. The Kedusha Sa'aretz was Batel. Then it really is exactly like Surya when it comes to Maestros and Shemitah. So for Rashi, the equation is perfect. If it's the perfect equation, then Yesh Kinyan Akum Lafia. However, said the Beis HaLevi, if the reason is because there's no Yovel, or the reason is because of lack of Bias Kolchem, it's very possible that there is Kedusha Sa'aretz. Just for other extraneous reasons, there's no Chiyuv Shemitah in the Torah. But then, it's not clear that it's equal to Surya, and it's not at all clear that you would say Yesh Kinyan Akum Lafkia. For example, Beis HaLevi's famous argument was vegetables, Maisa Yerek is only Drabana. Maisa Yerek is only Drabana. In the Torah, you need either Peros or maybe even Dagon. You need the Dagon Tirosh V'Yitzar in order to be Chayav Trumas HaMaisos Min HaTorah. So Beit HaLevi said, did anybody ever say that Maisa Yerek Drabanan in Eretz Yisrael, Bizman that Trumas HaMaisos is Min HaTorah, is the equivalent of Surya, and that non-Jewish ownership would affect the Chiyuv of Maisa Yerek Drabanan? Why not? If everything that's Drabanan is the same, Surya is Drabanan, Yesh Kinyan Akum. Maisa Yerek is Rabbanan, Yesh Kinyan Akum. But no one ever said it. Why? Because even though Maisa Yerek is Rabbanan, it's a Rabbanan that stems from what? From a Kedusha, or that is linked with what? A Kedusha Sa'aretz, that is Doraisa. And that's where Ein Kinyan Akum. Kinyan Akum effectiveness is not about Rabbanan and Doraisa. It's about Kedushas HaKarka, Kedushas HaAretz. That's why the Beis HaLevi rejected a Hetzer Mechira. However, the Rav once pointed out that Rav Chaim had a view, and this is what I'd like to elaborate on, but we just don't have more time, that Bias Kolchem, the fact that most Jews returned to Eretz Yisrael, that halacha may affect Kedushas Haaretz as well. In other words, because most Jews did not return in the time of Ezra, the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael was inferior or non-existent or not fully existent in that period. And then the possibility of equating the Shemitah Durabanan because of Bias Kulchem with Surya once again becomes a possibility. And if it becomes a possibility, then there could be again a justification for the Hetzer Mechir. My time is up, so let me just conclude by saying the following. I've tried to present some of the issues, both on the question of whether you're allowed to sell the land and whether selling it is effective or not. I hope what has emerged is that this is a clear machlokes l'shem shamayim, in which the arguments on all sides are very strong. It's a machlokes between Gedolei Yisrael. I mean, the roster that I mentioned before, unequaled in their stature. It should be understood that the issue was never one of being Mekel or Machmir in Shemitah, or being Mekel and Machmir in Chibas Haaretz. The issue has always been one of trying to figure out holistically, in an integrated way, what is the best thing for Klal Yisrael. The situation today is a little bit different than it was then. The economy of Eretz Yisrael has changed and grown and is much more capable of being Shomer Shvius today than it was in many respects. At the same time, the presence of a huge secular majority even of Jews in Eretz Yisrael is a reality, you know, which cannot be ignored either. It's clear, according to all poskim, that the ideal is to be Shomer Shvius properly, as I began with, so that all these ideals and values that are crucial to Klal Yisrael's national life and to each individual as well can be observed. At the same time, it's very important for those Jews in Eretz Yisrael who unfortunately are far from observance that they be protected and that there be something like a Hetzer Mechira, which protects them from their ignorance or from their lack of interest. And that's why, as a backup, the Rabbanut HaRashit always invoked this idea of Hetzer Mechira. This year, the situation has been somewhat different. I don't have time to go into elaborate. Things are much more helter-skelter in Eretz Yisrael. The first time that the Rabbanut did not invoke the Hetzer Mechira for the entire country, they left it up to each municipality, I think, and there's been, I think, a lot of negative press about it, and I think for good reason. The important thing for us here to understand is that we should certainly be supporting those courageous Shomrei Shvius, you know, who really sacrifice in order to observe Shemitah properly, even as we try to protect the rest of the Tzibur. I just wanted to conclude with the words of Rav Kook, who, as I mentioned, was an advocate of the Hetzer Mechira, but whose passion, of course, for mitzvos hatluyos v'aretz was second to no one's, and who was sensitive to both sides of these issues, and who wrote in a letter, Hashem Yisbarach Yirachem al Amo v'Yartzo Mehera v'Yachbosh l'Shvurei Levav HaMechutzim b'Machatz Ke'ev Nora al HaMatzav HaMadiv Shel Eretz HaKadosha v'Yashveha. Ribbono Shel Olam should take mercy on members, people who live in Eretz Yisrael and who are in difficult straits. These are words that were written a long time ago, but obviously apply today, different challenges and different difficulties. Hame'ikli kanes bepirtzos techukos ke'elu. V'yitein mehera mitzion Yeshua liYisrael tiparto. B'nisav rama degel torasenu haktosha v'kiyum kol mitzvosaha. That the flag of Torah and kiyum mitzvos in its ideal way is something that we should all see and a banner which we should all rally around, ubechlalon, and included in them, hamitzvos hatlios ba'aretz bechlal, ukedushas Shabbos ba'aretz, shmita, bifrat, al admas hakodesh. The simcha slave, kol oavei Hashem, hametzapim lishuas ha'emes. Kein yehi ratzon. Thank you.